Welcome to the Global from Asia podcast, where the daunting process of running an international business from Hong Kong is broken down into straight up actionable advice. And now, your host, Michael Michelini.
Thank you, listeners, for tuning in to another episode of Global from Asia. We're up to episode 8 here, and it's only been a few weeks. A few of my friends are amazed at how many we're cranking out. I'm trying to do a couple a week as we start to kick it off. I'll wind it down to maybe once a week. I'm trying to pick a schedule and a release, maybe Mondays, if anybody has some feedback. I'd appreciate that. Today's a fun episode. We have Sebastian van der Waals. He's a Dutch entrepreneur selling wine in China, visiting down in Shenzhen. He was on a business trip. And another funny thing was we really wanted to make this podcast happen because we got locked out. We were in this hotel in an office section, and the door slammed locked, and we had to call security, and it was pretty hilarious. There was no backup key. It was a lock, and he didn't have a key to the office room, and neither did the security or the admin of the hotel. So after about half an hour of trying to pick the lock, Sebastian suggested that we have them kick the door open, and the Chinese security seemed to go right along with that, and took about only two kicks, and it stripped the door right off the hinge there. And I'll put a picture up on the blog, globalfromasia.com/episode8, for those that want to check it out. I wanted to take a video, but it just happened so quickly. It was a pretty funny event, just showing you how serious we are about making this podcast happen. So let's tune in to episode 8 interview, and then after I'll do a quick summary as I've been doing, as well as some reviews from some of our listeners.
Take out your pen and notebook, gentlemen.
Thank you, everybody, for tuning in to another episode of Global from Asia. I'm here in Shenzhen, China, and we have a special visitor from Shanghai, Sebastian van der Waals. And just like him to introduce himself and his company.
Hi guys, my name is Sebastian. It's great to be in the podcast today. I'm based in Shanghai, originally from Holland, little place next to Amsterdam. Grew up there and moved to Shanghai a couple of years ago. Initially, I studied in Beijing, like lots of us get into China, and then moved to Shanghai in about 2009. Started my company, started to import wines, which was, a good market. It's still a good market. It's a very hot market. We decided to kind of like change the model of, you know, initially you take stuff out of China, you're exporting it, and we decided to import, which was spot on. And I think another major change we made initially was like not to sell on the East Coast, but to move directly towards the West, towards Chongqing and Chengdu. So that's what we do.
So Western China is more like the inner China, away from the bigger first-tier cities like Beijing, Shanghai. So that just for those listeners that aren't clear. So should I call you Sebastian or Bas, or how do you go?
I'd say that my friends in the Netherlands, they call me Bas. But if I introduce myself as Bas in China, they will either associate it with a bus or with a boss. So Sebastian just sounds clear to them. It's the best way to go for me.
Just another funny cultural and language adaption that we all have here in Asia. So how did you get into this wine business? Is this your first business here, or maybe a little bit more background?
I think it all started on a Saturday afternoon in Holland, when one of my friends introduced me to a wine trader, which then invited me to come to his wine cellar. And 15-16-year-old boy is quite interesting to go into the cellar and to have a nice glass of wine on a Saturday afternoon and start learning about all the ins and outs. So I think that's about 14-15 years ago. And ever since, I've been drinking wine and enjoying it when picking in the south of France, throughout the whole process, or everything. So that's how I got into it. And then in about 2006, I started a company in Holland, which is called Minerals Holland, which was a trading company to obtain and resell contracts for shopping centers, exhibitions, fairs. So basically, people would log in, check out the available space, and make a booking. And that platform got sold in right before I went to China in 2008. So that was great. I'm still in, but just for a certain small equity share as a silent partner. So that's great. Moved into China and decided not to bring cash. Initially, not a lot of cash. I think we came in with maybe 5 or 10,000 on the balance. Speed things up a little bit and get some people on board. And took it from there.
Good story. And I think you are right. It's a hot time now to bring product into China and sell into China. I'm sure there's listeners very curious. So then you opened a Hong Kong limited company first, or do you want to explain your structure of your business?
Sure. So initially we just we were just testing the waters. Like back in 2008 around the Olympic Games, just checking the waters, seeing if there was any interest for the wines. Got some samples. I think we bought like 2,000 euro of samples, got them in, sampled them out, and I think we had literally a conversion rate of 5%, which is actually quite reasonable. But then again, it took a long time before these people actually decided to buy something. So I had to follow up. So it took, I think, the first year or two of this particular business was a little bit slow. When it really started to pick up was when we decided to, you know, to elevate the numbers and to get a couple of people on board. But your original question was regarding the structure. So we set up the limited. Yes, we have a limited in Hong Kong. We have a warehouse in Qingdao in China, and we have the license there. We have the company there as well. So Hong Kong is a great base to pay your taxes, but China is extremely closed garden. So you gotta have your licenses sorted out in order to be able to sell and to move products into China.
Great. Okay. Thank you for that clarification. And I think also from previous podcasts, I think you didn't open Hong Kong Limited right away. Like you said, in 2008, 2009, you were bringing samples here. I think it might be clear to specify when you decided to open a Hong Kong Limited, or how long, or how did you operate before. I think I wanted to just clarify that, because I know there's some people that are maybe rushing to open a company and structure. I have a feeling you did it later, so I just want you to maybe explain that decision making.
Sure, that's absolutely true. Initially, we brought in the samples through Hong Kong. Throughout the Hong Kong border, we paid 35 renminbi per bottle to smuggle them into China, which is a very creative and not a very scalable way. So when we found out that we can continue bringing in samples like that, I got in touch with a Italian wine trader, which already obtained the license, which is a terrible, terrible process. It's very complicated and bureaucratic. And he offered me to bring in the samples for a 2-3% fee, which seemed, you know, like a fair deal. He was making a little bit money and we could bring in the samples. So obviously that's also not a very scalable model, but at least we were doing it legit and we had a proper channel. So that's how we started. And I think the first limited was only opened a couple of years ago. So after like, I would say after like 600 days in business, that's when we opened the first limited.
Yeah. So I don't know how people feel listening, but I think a lot of our more experienced people would agree with doing something like that to make sure you're totally certain that having a Hong Kong limited or an Asia business is right before you coming from the West is to do that. So I think some listeners are curious about how you receive payment or your cash flow, B2B or B2C, and payment methods. So maybe you can just go into that a little bit.
Sure. So we mainly deal with wholesale operations, distributors, mainly due to their buying power. So it's obviously, I can take small orders as in like a couple of thousand bottles, or minimum order quantity lies around a container, depending how you pack it. But I'd say that 14,500 bottles is a proper load without pellets, and with pellets it would be around 12k, something like that. So the fact that we can actually pack this container properly, that's a competitive advantage. That's why I have another partner in France who can do it the best way possible. Now regarding the structure, we are dealing business to business, wholesale operations, distributors, mainly because they have their licenses sorted out, or I can bring them in and they take it from there. But it's not too complicated. Obviously for me, the best way that they can take the wines is, let's say, CIF Shanghai. Then it's just on board, they take them off the ship, or I put them on the, you know, just in the harbor, and they clear them. That's the easiest way to go. And from time to time, not all of the wholesale operations have it, but let's say about 60% actually has the license. Now, if you find one of those, that's golden. That's a hidden gem. Now, the smaller ones who are already importing food and beverage and just getting into wines, they don't have their license sorted out. So that's why I come in. Obviously, I will charge them slightly for it, but it's still interesting. I'd say that's the way we're operating the business right now. Recently, we got a warehouse in Qingdao. We are building stock right now. I'd say that right now we have around 2 containers stock. So actually since mid 2013, we start to actually sample smaller clients like restaurants, so we can start taking orders at a minimum of 4,000 bottles.
Well, thank you for that. So then I think in B2B and distributor, I'm curious about payment. Do they pay you wire transfer? Like, do they pay you cash? We've heard some stories in the books about cash, like in briefcases, or is it terms, or how are normally you're structuring your payments?
I prefer my clients paying me through the Hong Kong Limited due to tax reasons. So what we usually do, we have an initial down payment of about 30%. This allows me to pay my, to pay the guys in France or in Italy or in Spain for that matter. And from that particular point is really depending on the client. Now, if he wants to pay in China, I'd say that cash is better. If he wants to pay in Hong Kong, he can just wire the money. It's really depending. So we talk to the client, we see what he or she prefers and take it from there.
For those interested in China business from Hong Kong or from anywhere, I know there's a lot of listeners curious about cracking the China market. We would love maybe you explain how you do it on the ground from Shanghai or inside China.
Sure. So we operate, as I mentioned before, we're selling in Chongqing and Chengdu. These are, I would say, second tier cities, still have a shitload of people on the ground. And this is where we have sales representatives. Now, what we do, we go to a particular fair. We get ourselves a nice booth, which you can even share with other people bringing wines to China. We get about 5 girls and we get as much contact with the buyers as possible. Usually how it's been done, you get the fair on the ground and then you get a nice hotel room. Whenever the door is open, people can come in, they can taste the wines. So it's not only on the actual fair, during the fair, it's also during the night, people will still come to, you know, to your location and taste the wines. Now, the way we structure this right now is that we have a office in Shanghai. This is mainly for administrative reasons. And besides that, we have around 7 to 8 sales representatives. These are trading companies and also individuals. It's really depending on the size of the client base, if they have contacts. So usually what we do, we get in contact, we discuss what are the opportunities, we make a revenue share and take it from there. And it's a really effective method of actually planting your flag in the ground all over China. I think that's very important from day one because it's such a big market. So you will need to have those partners. You can't assume that if you're covering the west of China, that you're automatically in the south. You know, that it just doesn't work like that. And I think that's kind of like a noob mistake. Lots of people will make it and they will have a nice market share, but they will never really reach their true potential.
And that kind of leads into a plug for my own startup, Social Agent. We help companies find local sales agents in different parts of China. Like Boss is saying, it's very important to have representation locally. I think still China business, especially in B2B or wholesale or distributors, they want to see a face. They want to meet the people. They want to taste the wine or see the product, see a sample. So, you know, I think for listeners here, I know a lot of people like to do the online business where they can do everything virtually, but you know, when you're doing business in China, especially on like on a B2B distributor level, to have people that are on the ground there to meet with the customers is important.
Absolutely. I would confirm. I mean, I think it's really important to acknowledge that specifically in China, people want to see a face, which I've seen before. So it's important if you have a nice girl who can actually go to the customer and get the wines, then if the moment approaches that they want to make a purchase, obviously somebody has to fly in who's representing Europe. In this case, it's me or one of my colleagues. But I think that is just extremely important to have that sales representative. And as Mike just mentioned, his startup company is focusing on that. I have a tryout set up with Mike to focus on, I'd say, second tier cities as well. We're looking into Wuhan. We're looking into Chongqing as well. I think this is an extremely interesting market. I mean, people flying into Shanghai or into Beijing or Guangzhou and take it from there. Look at this, at those smaller cities in China. There's golden opportunities. Just need to have the right guy on the ground.
We were talking earlier about a new business that you're looking into, and the difference is, I think, it's a digital product business. Maybe you could explain the differences or introduce what you're working on.
All right, so we're currently looking and getting a lot of requests from people to represent their brands in China. So what we're looking to do is to set up a trading platform for display advertising. Actually, this is something which we already accomplished. Initially, we started as a trading company, a digital trading company, and now we're moving into a space which is, I'd say, a little bit more high-end. We're acting as a DSP, which is a demand-side platform. And this allows buyers of digital advertising to manage multiple ad exchanges and to work with a real-time bidding opportunity and actually have a dashboard where they can monitor performances. We're moving into this space. This is really interesting. And I think that for me, it's like I can continue doing the physical trading and I will continue doing it as long as China will allow me to. The thing is that my business can be shut down. So I've got to differentiate. I've got to bet on different horses. And this is why we move into the digital space. Initially, I think that China is a very, very interesting location to continue. We're moving into Southeast Asia in general. We're looking into Vietnam, Indonesia, the Philippines, major opportunities there. So we're building the platform right now. It's mainly focusing on CPA, that's cost per action, cost per install, and cost per download, CPD. This is something we're moving into it as we speak, and it's extremely interesting. I can disclose more in the nearby future.
Maybe we could also add it to the notes on the episode later when we get that link. So how about people that want to do business with you now or contact you? How should they do that?
So you can find me on LinkedIn, Bas van der Waals. You can check out our website, which is European Finest for the wines. And the digital trading is lemonova.com. I'd say that the Dynamite Circle is obviously also a good place to go. So get on there, just subscribe, pay that bug a day. It's a great platform to be, great people, great inspiration.
We'll link all that. This is episode 8, so it'll be globalfromasia.com/episode8. We're both members of dynamitecircle.com, which is a members only private network of other entrepreneurs and businessmen to share ideas. Another thing I think we should talk about is a book we have actually on the table here in the interview, Poorly Made in China. Do you want to explain that book?
Sure. Actually, I'm digging into it as we speak. I think I'm halfway. And this is a really interesting book just to get the ins and outs. And I'd say that the tricks up the sleeve of the average, I would say factory owner, but the average Chinese buyer, they all have a nice thick book of tricks they can play on you. It's really good to understand your buyer, the way he or she is thinking, and how she might maneuver herself or himself and you with that into a particular situation. So know your supplier and know their tricks. I think that is good for the sales side, it's good for the demand side. For that matter, I mean, it's really important to get a local on board who knows those tricks and tips.
I think another book is Art of War. And I think a lot of Chinese all read that book. So if you want to understand the book they're reading, that might be one to look into too. And maybe one tip, I try to do every episode maybe to kind of end it or wrap it up by what the listener can do, or what's a tidbit of information that they could walk away from today.
Actually, I just gave away my tip. Tip number one would be to get that local on board. And that applies to the Chinese market because it's such a closed garden. You can be at all places, or you're sitting in one of the first tier cities, it just doesn't work like that. So regarding China, I would say that's the way to go. If you're manufacturing, master that book, Poorly Made in China and the Art of War. This will give you a lot of insights, lots of good tips, how to approach factories and how to get the max out of the situation. I'd say that if you literally want to manufacture within China, I'd say that if you want to get your price down, bring designs from Europe or from the States. We were just talking about it. That's a really interesting way. A friend of mine literally chopped his price by half just by bringing in fresh designs. That's what they really want to have. That's something what they can make money with in the future. So that's the way to go if you want to do physical manufacturing. Regarding digital, we're exploring as we speak. I've been in the industry for about 2 to 3 years, working with very good people on the ground. And this is the next frontier, so to speak. But for now, let's focus on China, still manufacture as long as we can for good prices. But we should absolutely acknowledge that the Chinese middle class is developing. There's a lot of good business to be done on the ground. And I suggest that we start getting more products, more luxury products from the West into China, represent them, and do some good business together.
Thank you very much, boss or boss.
As they say, it's Sebastian.
Sebastian. But in China, maybe he is the boss. He's a great boss. So thank you again for your time today and sharing your insights. That's episode 8 of Global from Asia. Thank you.
Can we have a recap for today, Mike?
All right, so I hope you guys enjoyed that interview. We're trying to mix it up. I'm trying to get some maybe professional, you know, consultants and experts on the show, as well as some entrepreneurs. So I thank Sebastian for taking the time to share his insights of his business and his inner workings. I think we see a trend here already in this Global from Asia series. A lot of people were interviewing, you know, saying don't rush into opening a company and bank accounts and everything. Make sure you see signs of a business, see some revenue coming in before you rush into it, especially overseas or international business. You know, he was mentioning how he spent a year to get some customers. He's bringing samples of wine into China through Hong Kong. He was kind of like sending it out to different potential buyers, doing B2B. He also mentioned, you know, licenses. He rents a license in China to sell the wine. Then he pays a fee for that. You know, business in China, we could spend years talking about, but sometimes it's just better to pay people or work with people that have the relationships and the licenses rather than trying to do everything yourself. Same with maybe importing and exporting of all different kinds of products. He also mentioned, you know, trade fairs, having people on the ground locally. I think that's true everywhere, but I specifically think in China, the customers usually like to see somebody from the company. He also mentions that he himself, as a European, goes to meet some clients in different parts of China. And he's also mentioning how he's focusing on Western China rather than coastal China. So in the West is Midland, not near the ocean, and it's kind of a newer developing cities such as Chongqing, he mentioned. So I think there's lots of opportunity there, and we call second tier or even third tier cities. I think a lot of people would agree, Beijing, Shanghai, you know, Guangzhou, Shenzhen, those are kind of already really, really well developed, and to bring a new product there might be more competitive, whereas if you go into inner China, you have much more opportunities and less competition.
Some words from our loyal listeners.
Now for some of my favorite things, benefits I've been getting from this podcast is some feedback and reviews. I still don't see iTunes reviews. Some of my listeners have said they've left some reviews, but they're not showing up. But we definitely, I get them on different channels. So I just want to highlight Michael Feldman. He's listened to a few, I know, and he left me a LinkedIn status update. He says, Michael, kudos on your insightful podcasts. Good and helpful stuff. Well, you're welcome, and thanks for listening. If you or others have any feedback for me about topics or any kind of like ways I can improve the show, I'd really appreciate it. That's what keeps me interested in keeping rocking with this. So we'll get you guys next time.
To get more info about running an international business via Hong Kong, please visit our website at www.globalfromasia.com. That's www.globalfromasia.com. Also, be sure to subscribe to our iTunes feed. Thanks for tuning in.